Can you all hear me? Until today, until now, no inquiries into the role of fungal hallucinogens in prehistory have ever dealt with the natives of North America. This has not meant that hard evidence was lacking. That evidence, though scant, has been accessible to any diligent seeker. To most, perhaps all of you, it will come as a surprise to learn that the natives of this land shared with the Eurasians the Fly-Agaric practices documented by us in 1957 in Mushrooms, Russia, and History, and more fully in 1968 in Soma, Divine Mushroom of Immortality. Only the role of the reindeer in the Siberian mushroom complex is perforce absent from North America. Today, Mr. Reed Kaplan and I will present to you the evidence that the Ojibwe and some others of Algonquian stock living in the woodlands of our country and Canada consulted the fly agaric for divine guidance in their shamanic observances. Our evidence will help in clarifying the ambiguities and murky passages of our Siberian informants. May not our new testimony from the New World and the Siberian documentation, taken together, suggest a common ancestry in the remote past. Just as in Siberia, here also there was abuse of the mushroom for inebriating effect. We must not forget that north of Mexico, our native population, before the white man came, possessed no alcoholic beverages, and the only road to inebriation was by ingesting plant hallucinogens, amongst which the fly agaric was most important. Almost 20 years ago, shortly after the publication of Mushrooms, Russia, and History, Claude Lévi-Strauss, the famous anthropologist, wrote us a letter from Paris calling our attention to a remarkable citation concerning mushrooms in North America in the Jesuit Relations. A superior of the Jesuit order, Père Charles Lalemant, in a lengthy epistle dated August 1, 1626, from Quebec to his brother in France, also a Jesuit father, undertook to describe the customs of the natives thereabouts, an Algonquian group. Discoursing on their religious beliefs, he wrote, and I translate, "They assure you that after death, they go to heaven, where they eat mushrooms and hold intercourse with each other." He fails to tell us why they singled out mushrooms to eat, nor does he tell us what kind they ate. We can now say with certainty that those mushrooms were Amanita muscaria, the fly agaric. Let it also be noted that Père Lalemant's letter to his brother was dated in 1626, a full century earlier than the earliest reference to the Siberian mushroom practice, namely von Strahlenberg's few words published in 1730. For years I was busy with mushroom problems in far parts of the world, but this citation that my friend Lévi-Strauss had sent me never ceased to rankle in me. I simply had to find time and opportunity to follow it up. But I did not happen on anyone in touch with Algonquian speakers until the spring of 1975, when I found myself seated in the Harvard Faculty Club next to Yves Godard, who was lecturing at that time in the linguistic department on Amerindian languages, he himself specializing in the Algonquian family. When he told me his specialty, quickly I asked what his group's attitude to mushrooms was. Surprised, he said he had never thought to ask, but he manifested the liveliest interest. He suggests I write to one John Nichols, lecturing in Wisconsin University. He suggested I write, this I did on 26th of April. Nichols replied most courteously by return mail that he knew nothing on my subject, but he gave me the address of a native speaker who had prepared a paper on mushrooms, and I should try her out. This native speaker was Kiwadenokwe. Kiwadenokwe, she is the sole surviving person of her race, or of any race for that matter, living on a small island in the waters of the Great Lakes area, where once there were scores of her people. She is herbalist and shaman of the Ojibwe tribe, in her 60s, 5/8 Ojibwe, and a fierce defender of the rich cultural legacy that comes down to her from her Ojibwe ancestors. As you will have inferred, this contact with Kiwadenokwe has proved richly rewarding for us, and I hope it also will be for her and for you. It has led to our being here today. We have exchanged lengthy letters, and I found that through her the portals were thrown wide for me into Ojibwe manners and traditions. She has visited me in Connecticut on 3 occasions. In August 1976, I spent a week with her on her island, and there she presented to me a superb and precious birch bark scroll that she made for me, giving me in picture writing the legendary tale of the genesis of the Fly Agaric discovery among the Ojibwe and the deep-seated ambivalence of this race toward it. In August 1977, my colleague Reed Kaplan passed a week with her on her island, and Key initiated him into the rites of the formal Miscuedo ceremonial. The deep-seated and sometimes violently ambivalence toward the Fly Agaric among the Ojibwe, which I have mentioned, is documented not only in the scroll that Kiwadenokwe has given us, but one of the dramatic events in her life, in her own life, also embodies it. She was apprenticed as a child to an herbalist, Nojimakwe, who lived in the village of Onomini on Leelanau Peninsula, and served her apprenticeship with this remarkable woman for a number of years. Nojimakwe was strongly, even fanatically, opposed to the use of Amanita muscaria, and although Kiwade respected and loved her teacher, staying in close contact with her for a number of years after her apprenticeship, she learned the art and technique of taking the sacred mushroom from another herbalist, also respected in the highest degree. We gather from the clear evidence of our scroll that this ambivalent attitude of the Ojibwe to the sacred mushroom is an ingrained element in Ojibwe culture, stemming far back in time. From our Siberian witnesses, we get no hint of a similar ambivalence there, but we must allow for the possibility that our informants simply failed to elicit evidence concerning it. The Ojibwe lived and live in what is now Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and the adjacent regions of Canada. They are renowned for the many uses to which they put birch bark, and perhaps the most notable and distinctive of these uses was the Ojibwe Weg, the hand-drawn picture writings on scrolls of birch bark. They had developed this art of picture writing much further than any others of the races that dwelt in North America. According to Key, it is from this word Ojibwe Weg that we have taken the name by which the Ojibwe are known. Though it seems to me that this name is a compliment to the gifts of her people, Key objects to it and says that they should be called by the word that they use in speaking about themselves, Anishinaabe, Anishinaabe. And in deference to her wishes, I shall hereafter use this name. The Anishinaabeg have many names for the fly agaric, among which the most common today is the Miskwedo. The red top, although this English rendering lacks one important element inherent in the term Miskwedo, namely that it is a mushroom dependent on trees. Now a word about our picture scroll. Key has drawn it from memory of a scroll that she saw in possession of a storyteller who lived long ago. This storyteller bore the name Ispaque, the Spanish woman, Ispaque. Ispaque, incidentally, was renowned for her uncanny skill in separating the successive layers of the birch bark with which the scrolls were made. We must remember that in all unlettered cultures, those charged with being the culture bearers trained their memories to an astonishing degree. These picture scrolls are mnemonic aids to the human memory, in this case to the storyteller's memory, as he or perhaps she retells the old, old story of the Miskwedo, embellishing the tale with grace notes, intonational flourishes, and the beating of a small drum, the pim drum, that accompanies the telling. The time for the storytelling was the long winter evenings and nights when old and young of both sexes would crowd together in the wigwam around the fire, and the fame of the good storyteller would spread far and wide. Though perhaps 50 years had passed, Key had little difficulty in giving us the Ojibwega the Miskwedo tale, a fitting performance for one belonging to the Crane clan as she does. The scroll of which I am now the proud owner traces its lineage to Ispaque, but its more remote lineage, untraceable, goes back, back, far, how far back no one can say. It is our incredible good fortune to have arrived on the spot in time to profit from the presence of Kiwadenokwe, who, apart from much else, has given us these Ojibweg of her people, the mushroom tale of the Anishinaabeg. Let us remember, however, that the Ojibweg are far more than mnemonic scrolls carefully kept in hollow tree trunks to preserve tribal tradition. Those who are masters of the Ojibweg can write anything with them, letters to absent ones, notes for friends to pick up, and so forth and so forth. The scrolls carefully kept in museums and universities give undue emphasis to the documents written for lasting use. We have confirmation from outside sources of the elements in this tale up to the final section, the section that Reed and I have come to call the coda. The publication of this scroll may bring out from Norval Moriso or others an affirmation that this part of the story conforms to their understanding. How has the Miskwedo escaped attention until now? The Catholic missionaries for centuries were excommunicating natives who resorted to the mushroom. The Protestant missionaries similarly condemned its use. In a series of episodes that Kiwadenokwe has supplied us with, we find that the whites living in daily contact with the Anishinaabeg knew of the Miskwedo and sometimes invoked its aid or asked a native to do so on their behalf. In the 10th annual report of the Bureau of Ethnology, 1888-1889, we discover this startling sentence concerning the Anishinaabeg. The ceremonial chants could be advantageously pronounced only under inspiration, which was of old obtained by a tedious form of intoxication, now expedited by alcohol. Imagine, dismissing it like that, what was this unexplained, tedious form of intoxication? The ceremonial use of Miskwedo, of course. It seems that everyone knew of this major trait of the Anishinaabeg, a deeply ingrained religious practice. Everyone except the anthropologists, who I am told prefer to study native peoples in distant lands. And the mycologists, of course, who in Michigan, since the days of C.H. Kaufman, have held themselves in rather high regard, but their discipline ends with mycology and does not extend one step into ethnomycology. Perhaps it is just as well. The ceremonial use of Miskwedo has been preserved for us as in a time capsule, unsullied by mishandling. We have no way of telling how far back the ancestry of our scroll goes, nor how far afield. Thanks to Key, we possess ample documentation on the Anishinaabe, and in the light of Key's testimony, the meager evidence for the use of Miskwedo among the Montagnais and the Abenaki, Algonquian speakers, both of them, takes on persuasive significance. But is it conceivable that they alone of the native peoples of North America had recourse to the divine mushroom of immortality? How about the Lenape, a woodland folk of the East Coast, who also lived where the birch and conifer flourish, and all the other Algonquian-speaking tribes? And how about the Iroquois and their kindred peoples, and the peoples of the Northwest Coast, where the Miskwedo abounds, and the Athabascans of the Upper Yukon and the Mackenzie and the Great Slave Lake? I think they're the best candidates for an energetic and able anthropologist to visit. Before I hand over this meeting to Key and Reed, perhaps it is advisable that I remind you of the utter dependence in our culture on the alphabet. Our alphabet, supplemented centuries ago by the printing press, and in recent decades by our Xerox devices, and even more recently by our retrieval systems, shapes and molds our lives for better or perhaps for worse. In Key, with her immense heritage of oral culture, we have an exemplar of the old culture that existed and indeed still exists for far, far more millennia than the brief five or six that comprise the life of the written word. Early man, by which term I mean our ancestors before they possessed the faculty of writing down what they said, relied on human memory for their knowledge of the past, and in those who were the culture bearers, that memory, perhaps a little inaccurate, was prodigious. Key is a singularly able exponent of both cultures, heir to the legacy of oral culture from her native people and practitioner of our contemporary American culture, 1978 Rand. Reed Kaplan and I now have the unusual privilege, a privilege that we hardly dared hope for, of presenting you today in person an Anishinaabeg shaman, Key Wade Nokwe, member of the Crane clan, the clan that is the repository of the knowledge and tradition of her people. She speaks and writes English better than many of us. At first, and for a long time, she refused even to consider coming here. She was unwilling to discuss the religious beliefs of her people in front of a large and decidedly mixed gathering. I have assured her that this gathering, though indeed large and mixed, is thirsting for what she alone can convey to you, and that you would all understand her position as one who knows well the Miskwedo, who took the Miskwedo for the first time at the age of about 14, who has taken it three or four or five times in almost every year since then, over close to half a century, and who knows that when taken in grave circumstances and in purity of heart, it gives inspired guidance. She has never taken the Miskwedo lightly or frivolously. She has never taken it for recreation. She has never taken it for recreation. There may be among you some Anishinaabe, if among them there is any member of the Crane clan, or members of the Crane clan, I now say to you, Away mogvi shokok.